Hello, dear listeners. A little disclaimer. We had some sound issues this time with overlapping noises and background noises. I hope it's not too bad. We will fix it for next time and hope you still enjoy the podcast. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, the Game Theory Jits Talk is brought to you live from Germany, Cologne, with Sven, Nelson and Francesco. I hate pineapple pizza. Fonti. First of all, you're the head coach in Hanau. You're the initiator of the famous, infamous Sub-Oni tournament.
It's been a while and I should do it again.
Yes, you should. But you're here because we all know... Okay, let's start from the beginning.
We didn't drop the name of the gym. The gym's name actually is Next Level MMA.
Next Level MMA, Hanau, correct. Gym. I didn't say it. Okay. Next Level MMA, Google it.
You just said Hanau.
There's only one gym in Hanau. Okay, so last time we talked about that maybe there's no new stuff in jiu-jitsu or whatsoever. Now people finally start talking about the way we teach and approach jiu-jitsu. This, Sven said, this is a good sign because it shows it's getting more professional after all. Because if you have nothing more to talk about, then you start thinking about how do I teach the stuff I finally know. And there's a big debate going on. There's a thing called ecological approach, or I think in BJJ, it's the constraint-led approach. Is this the same, or is the constraint-led approach the way we teach ecological in BJJ, or how is that? What is your approach called?
CLA is not the same. Let's go like this. Ecological approach, it's an umbrella term. And it covers two things, which are ecological dynamics and constraint-led approach. Ecological dynamics is a theory of perception. It's a psychological theory of how we interact with the world around us. So that's not just about jiu-jitsu. It's just, you know, how you interact and you learn with anything around you. Okay, it's not just about jiu-jitsu. The constraint-led approach instead is a training methodology where instead of giving direct instruction to the athlete, you create situations where the athlete can experience a subset of the game and get better at it.
Okay, I knew that, but you said it much better than I would have done it. So thank you for the clarification. We wanted to talk about this in our podcast last time, but then we said, actually, we don't know enough about it to really be able to judge it. And I think that many people in the BJJ community who say it's good or it's bad do have the same knowledge as I do. It's not enough to really judge what is going on. So we're here today that you can tell us what is the core of the CLA, and then we can talk about why it's shit. But first of all, we would like to get to the point. What is it? Because after you and Sven talked a while ago, he actually started doing some kind of it. But I think Sven would agree he wasn't really that deep enough into it that he could say, now I tried this and that. Tell us, what is the core of this approach? Take all the time you need. And here we go.
So the basic idea, again, is that we cannot look. Let's do something, okay? I try to skip all the technical jargon, yeah, and I try to explain really in the simplest possible terms, okay?
That's very useful. Our listeners are not very smart or educated people.
I might deviate a bit from orthodoxy, let's say, but as long as it's more understandable, I think it's better, yeah. So the thing is, there is no training in absence of resistance, okay? Training and improvement only happens if resistance is possible. You can't do shit unless there is some resistance against that, right? So any training environment, when we remove resistance from the equation, is by definition not effective, or at the very least, it's not where learning and improvement are happening. So if you look at jiu-jitsu and we assume this very simple thing, because what I'm basically saying is that you only learn to fight if you are fighting, right? So if we look at quote unquote traditional ways of coaching, teaching, training jiu-jitsu, I think it's fairly easy to understand that the cold repetition of a technique against a partner who does nothing against it has nothing to do with learning and improving absolutely anything. Because what I'm doing there is removing from the learning experience the thing that defines improvement, which is doing it, which is overcoming something, having to do it against resistance. So the example I've recently made in another conversation is that what we're basically doing there is taking the water out of the swimming pool, going at the bottom of the pool, practicing our very perfect freestyle or frog style or whatever, walking at the bottom of the pool. And then we expect that, and then we expect that somehow we put water back in the pool and now we're swimming. And it just doesn't work like that. At the same time, obviously, I cannot just throw two people together and tell them choke each other and expect jiu-jitsu to emerge, right? That also doesn't happen, or at least doesn't happen in with a timeline that makes sense. Because if I abandon 20 people on a desert island and I give them 10 years and I give them the basic instruction, find out how to reach each other's arm, when I go back in 20 years, they will have their technique to rip each other's arm, right? So as a coach, that's what we want to do, is to make these things happen in the shortest time possible, right? So now, once again, if I remove resistance, I'm removing the main thing that creates improvement and learning. If I allow too much resistance, now everything becomes chaotic, unpredictable, uncontrollable, and you are pretty much just throwing shit at the wall. Maybe something sticks, maybe something doesn't. So what you do, you constrain the environment, you funnel the choices that people have so that you make certain things happen faster than they would have happened without your directions. So far, so good?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it, seriously. It's, you know, sometimes I feel like trying to explain people why the water is wet, because to me it's so natural, it's so self-understandable, this thing that 80% of the objections I receive are laughable, seriously.
I think we should make a clarification on resistance. What in that context to you is resistance? Because it sounds like you're mostly, and in some ways in this discussion, I'm going to play devil's advocate, or I'm trying to kind of steelman the best objections you could make to CLA, yeah. Even though I'm fairly convinced of most of it. So I don't fully agree, but that might be a wording thing, with there's no learning without resistance. I think there's no learning without overcoming difficulty or struggling through something. That doesn't necessarily mean
you're just rewarding the fact that in the system there has to be something that go against you.
That would be your definition of resistance, what you just said.
That might be a definition, definitely.
Because even if I'm drilling technique, I am overcoming resistance, not from a resisting partner, but from my brain being too stupid to understand a movement, and I have to overcome an internal struggle of actually figuring out how to move my body. So there's still there is still a form of resistance, or at least mental struggle or difficulty I have to overcome.
Yes, but we're talking about two different things here, because what you're talking about,
yeah, that's what I'm asking.
We are talking about two different things, because what you're talking about is the internal organization of informations, which is different. So if I want to go, if for reasons that elude me, I want to learn a 12-step process to pass the guard. Of course, if I'm going against a human grappling dummy, right, who offers me zero resistance, just offers me the legs so that I can go around, right? And now I have to go through a 12-step process to perform whatever I want to perform. Of course, I have to kind of go against the resistance. You know, you can call, in a way, the fact that you struggle to remember the 12-step a form of resistance of your own brain, right? So you are still overcoming something. But that's an internal process of organizing informations that you are fighting against it. But you're not developing any skill there, because we all know, and I really kind of hope there's no debate on it, that it doesn't matter how many millions times you are repeating this idealized 12-step process to pass the guard. As soon as the other guy decides that, no, you are not going to pass that guard, everything falls apart. And now you need variables and variants and what if and what if and what if.
I already have a lot of questions, but I think we should boil it down now to a scenario where every BJJ practitioner can understand what we are talking about in a BJJ setup. So this was what you told us was the umbrella thing, and now we're talking about, give us a situation in your classroom where you use this approach, and how is it done?
Look, very simple, okay? The class that I'm doing this week, I run the same class for 1 week, okay? Because this allows me to carefully monitor if there is progress and what things happen the most when I give certain certain constraint or certain focus. Oh, look at that guy.
I won the bet. Heiko is here and he has no shirt on. $5 for me. But go on, Francesco.
It looks like when you turn on the camera on Omegle and you...
F9, F9, or what is it? Okay, for the audience, Heiko joined. He can't hear anything, but we go on. Okay, you're teaching the same class all week, I hope. Not in a row, but there's breaks between it, okay? But keep on going.
So, just to make an example, okay? Just to make an example so we know a bit better.
Yeah, sure, Nick. Das wird nicht so.
Ciao, Heiko. The good thing is he says he doesn't hear us, but we hear him and everybody hears him. He doesn't care. For the audience, he just left again. Okay, he had no shirt on, he couldn't hear us, and he left again. Okay, thanks for that.
I'm telling you, that was an Omegle experience. So, okay. Three exercises on a guard scenario, three exercises on a pinning scenario, and then two or three on a stand-up scenario. It depends how much time is left, right? So, guard pass. Super simple. We start with supine guard. And the job of bottom player is to make connection with feet feet and hands to destabilize bottom player. Destabilization means that they're going to put the ass or the hand of top player on the floor, right? In this week, specifically in this week, we are focusing on connection on the, we are focusing on inside control. So the connection between the legs of top player, because last week we were playing games about getting inside control. So now this week, I don't have to talk too much about inside control because we were doing it last week. I'm just going like, okay, make connection, preferably inside control, destabilize your partner to their ass or their hand. As soon as their hip or hands touch the mat, you win, you flip. Top player, of course, you have, first of all, the task of not allowing connection to the, of not allowing inside control to your legs. Second, you have the task to touch either with your feet or with your head and shoulder the space between the armpit and the hip of bottom player. I'm pretty sure you guys can visualize it, right?
Yes.
Yes. And the top player to win this game has to achieved this goal 3 times. So while the bottom player has an immediate win, I put your ass on the floor, I win. Top player has to make contact with the inside area up of the upper body, so the space between the elbow and the hip, 3 times, either with their legs or with their head and torso. Top player is constrained. He cannot disengage, and he cannot drop on his knees. Only feet on the floor. And this is the game.
What happens if, for example, if I teach a class and I says I tell someone to sweep someone, and then now you can go into whatever, single leg X or something. And then you see beginners, they just fall flat down on their face, and the other one is like, yeah, I can't heel hook him now. And I say, yeah, because the technique I teach you is a specific answer to a specific problem. What if someone of your guys is constrained in some ways but finds a solution that works for the specific goal the other one has but doesn't make any sense at all?
I'm afraid I did not understand what you mean.
Okay, let's say...
You pulled in, fall in the face, entering in, a lot of stuff that I did not mention minimally on this first game.
Okay, let's say...
I couldn't either.
There's a guy on top. And my goal as a bottom player, for any reason, is to get inside control of the legs. So get my legs between his legs, for example. Mm-hmm. And now he just closes his legs, the top guy, which doesn't make any sense in a BJJ context, but it works against the specific goal. And then the guy says, oh, I can't figure it out. What are you doing then?
So basically, cheating the game or winning the game by something that is... would not be advisable if you open up to the overall jiu-jitsu context.
Yes.
The game is poorly designed.
Okay, yeah, I see that.
Right? Because like in this first game that I used as example, the top player cannot, you know, of course you want to deny inside control to the guard player as a passer, right? But I gave the top player the task of making contact with their feet to the inside, to the inside area of the upper body, right? So they have to move. They cannot cheat the game like that.
I see.
Right?
Yeah, it was just a general question, not a critic at a specific thing.
I know. But yeah, again, you know, it can happen. So, you know, it happens to me. It's not a problem. You design a game, you think it's a super great game, or everybody's going to have fun and everybody's going to invent shit. Then you see it unfolding and the weirdest stuff happened. The game was poorly designed. End of the story. Fix it. You know, it's easy. I mean, it's not easy because, but... the answer is easy.
So what would be the best outcome of a scenario like that? That someone figures out a way to do the things you ask of him against this specific person? Or would the best outcome be that you have a goal in mind and you see, okay, he's getting close to what I think is the best thing by himself? What would be a success in this case?
The best outcome is time on task. The best outcome is that as a coach, you have very clear in your mind what the task is about and what are you trying to improve on the athlete. And the best outcome is that they spend time on that, getting the experience that they need, right? Then it depends what you're working on, because maybe you're working precursors, maybe you're working final conditions, maybe you're working at a specific concept that can look in a thousand different ways.
Would you say that, because the big overall kind of argument around eco and traditional, if you want to call it that, traditional teaching is most of the time between like I show you a technique and you drill exactly what I show you, and this more open game based approach of CLA. Kind of a twofold question. One is very like the Lex Friedman, like, could you steel man what the best argument for the classical teaching approach of I show technique, you drill 3 times on your left side, 3 times on your right side, whatever, and then the other person does it? What would be like the best case you could make for that? And maybe then adjacent to that, what is there still a time and a place for a very specific intricate instruction on very specific scenarios? And if so, where do you see that?
So I have actually nothing against cold drilling a very specific sequence to achieve a very specific result. And I also have absolutely nothing against discussing, talking, showing, or again, drilling very specific scenario about a very specific subset of a very specific skill. I have absolutely nothing against that. The core of this discussion, the thing that never gets talked, or at least I still didn't hear anybody talking about it, is that there is a time for all of these things. Like, there is a clear timeline. And to drill at the beginning and then jumping in sparring fucks up this timeline completely. And that's where all the problem starts, right? The more you get specific into something, the less people are coming there with you. Jiu-Jitsu is no different from absolutely any other field of human knowledge. So there is a general level of knowledge that gather to the most people. And the more you get in specificities, the less people will follow you there. Right? There is a mathematic that you do at elementary school that every person on the planet knows, save, of course, dramatic exceptions, right? Yeah, there is the basic level mathematic that absolutely everybody knows, and then there is nuclear physicist.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So but
you know, to get from there, to get from basic mathematics to nuclear physics, there is a timeline where you start with very simple, very real world understandable scenarios, 2 apples plus 2 apples equals 4 apples. If we have 4 apples and we have 3 people, we need to split one, and now you get fractions and so on, right? There is this very basic mathematics that everybody can understand and it's easy to explain. And then there is nuclear physics, but to reach there, you need to, you know, you go through different level of studying, learning, problem solving until you reach that level. So the issue that I see is that in the, again, quote unquote traditional approach, let's just say traditional approach, we know what we mean with traditional approach, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I also know that not every gym does like that. Yes, thank you. I don't need anybody to tell me that. I know, but then we have positional sparring. No, thank you. Okay, but for the sake of argument, a point, okay? What happens is that the instructor, because somebody who operates like that is an instructor, is not a coach, shows a very specific set of steps to solve a problem, right? That's already not basic anymore, especially when you pass 4 or 5 steps. That's absolutely, there's nothing basic about that anymore, regardless of the technique that you're doing. And then you jump into sparring. So you are forcing onto people a level of detail that they are not ready for. But we have beginner's class. Yeah, okay, I know you have beginner's class, but again, yeah.
So is eco approach a beginner thing?
No, absolutely no. No, you can, I work with, you know, I mean, beginner to advanced competitors, everything, I can do anything with eco, because ecological.
Do they play the same games then?
Yes, they can play absolutely the same games. I can set specific constraints for specific people. Yeah. Right? But the same game will give different results depending on the people on the mat, on their level and so on and so on.
This right? Is exactly.
So
what
you would go through. You would go through the room then, and let's say for, because in our classes we have, ideally everyone from an elementary school math learner to the nuclear physicist on the mat. Usually we have way more elementary school kids than physicists, but we at least have the bandwidth. So if I understood you correctly, you addressed that bandwidth by basically, after explaining the basic game, going to your nuclear physicist and telling them, hey, here are more constraints specifically for you.
I can definitely set up specific constraints for specific people, which, and this does not necessarily mean that I set up more constraints for the more advanced guy, because I can use the constraint also to correct a rigid attractor, to correct a bad behavior, right? If I have a guy who has this super bad habit of hugging the head and going into kezagatame, and then all proud of this kezagatame, get his back taken 9 times out of 10, I'm just going to forbid him to touch anybody's head
until that
behavior is gone.
A few questions here. If you, for example, you know there is a bad behavior that the athlete shows. You know it's wrong to whatever, give up the underhook. Let's say that's bad behavior. But it works in this approach because the other guy doesn't know that it's bad behavior and can't use it against him. Okay, so he does the game and he thinks, okay, I succeed, but he only succeeds because the other guy is so bad, he can't capitalize on it. When I, for example, show a technique, I hope that our class thinks it will work because I tested it for them a few years. And if it doesn't work for them, then maybe they are doing something wrong. And if it might work on a white belt right away, it might not work on a purple belt right away. So they know, okay, I'm doing something wrong. I'm going to ask the instructor, what did I do wrong here? So where is the step in an equal approach where something works all the time against someone that is new? And then I'm like, oh, I figured it out. But half a year later, I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't. It's completely wrong what I'm doing. The other person just sucked.
No, I'm sorry, but even here the answer is that was a poorly designed game. Yeah. So look, the information by itself is neither, the information is an information by itself. What is ecological or IP is the way I transmit it. It's not the information itself. Right? Now, if I create a game where you can have a false victory because the other guy doesn't know what he's doing, that's a poorly designed game.
I see.
Right?
If you know that's, let's say the game is well designed, but still you're like, this guy who's aspiring to be a top physician does something wrong, a little detail where you know it's better to do something else. Why not just tell him?
Exactly. Why not just tell him? I will tell him.
Yeah, but you said at the start, you said it's all about so putting people on the island and say figure it out by yourself is not the best thing.
No, wait.
Because you want to shorten the learning experience. Yeah. So why not shorten it right away and tell them what to do instead of waiting if they're doing it wrong and then tell them that they're wrong.
Okay. Let me explain to you. So first of all, I say something else. Yeah. I say that look. If you drop 20 people on an island and you just tell them rip each other's limb apart, when you go back after 20 years, they will have find systematic ways. They will have find what works the less and the most. Okay, maybe it will not be as refined. For sure, it's not going to be as refined as the jiu-jitsu we have, but they will have some basic combat sport where they can. Okay, they will have found their solution.
They will have sambo, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And of course, we have this process. Now, the thing with the detail, I need you to face a problem so that I can talk to you about the solution. I will not invert this order. If I talk to you about the solution, if I give you a solution to a problem that you have never experienced, you have no value whatsoever for that solution that I'm offering you. If you went through the problem, the moment I offer you the solution, you have a value for that, which means it's going to stick into your brain much faster, much easier. right? And I don't have to, I don't need you to drill it anymore, because you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I can put you directly into the situation where you were having a problem. And in the live situation, you can now try your fucking solution. But I cannot reverse this order. This is what happens in the traditional way, let's say. They offer you solution for problems that you have absolutely no idea about. Imagine it's your trial session and the guy starts to talk to you about leg drag. And the fuck is that? This is the leg drag that won Keenan Cornelius his match against Paulo Miao when it happened was a big revolution in the jiu-jitsu world. I'm the trial session. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yes, but
I'm in a situation where I have a problem with those legs, and now show me how cool it is to kick that leg away. I'm going to do it right away because I have that problem to solve.
And now a little yes and to the problem solution thing. Also, you don't have to play an anticipation game of what may the problem may be that arises and think of the solution before, because the solution you're trying to give may be to a problem that doesn't even arise right away, or you're solving a problem that may not even have been there. And just waiting for people to run into problems and then solving them specifically will always be on target. And I think all of us in traditional teaching have found ourselves in situations where we were teaching or where we realized, okay, I'm teaching a solution to a problem that doesn't exist yet because people didn't even create that problem yet.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's
I cut you off, Nelson. Sorry.
So, look, another thing that can happen is that as a coach, I might be perfectly aware of the gym at large not having faced, for whatever reason, not having faced the problem that they might have to face in competition. Maybe, you know, because somehow yes, in the gym.
I have my personal example for that.
Yeah. Right? Okay, but fine, then I will steer, I will create that, I will make sure that the problem emerges on the mat. I can steer the development of movement in that direction so that now we have that problem in the gym. That's the job of the coach, right? It's not to just chase the last fashion and keep giving people information that they did not ask at, did not ask for.
I see that. There's one thing that Denha always says, like, I'm teaching the smartest guy in the room because it will make other people aspire to having the problems that guy has. I'm just saying this because this is an argument that can be made in this case. So, for example, you said the trial class, okay? If someone gets into a trial class, I think what draws you into the sport also is a kind of fascination. You see what guys are able to do that are doing this stuff for, let's say, 2 or 3 years. And you want to have the same. So you know it takes some time to develop the skills and maybe to even understand what's going on. Because when a trial comes in, I tell them, we will start in this and that position that might seem strange to you because you've never been in this situation. But trust me, if you start sparring after your trial class, you will be in that situation, and then then it takes some time to develop the knowledge. Why do I start here? Why do I start there? So there is this fascination and trust going on that I will be able to understand that one day. What about this? Like creating a goal in their heads where they can aspire to, like, okay, I want to be the guy who understands what's going on.
Well, that's part of the teaching process, right? But what I don't need to do, what truly doesn't happen on my mat, I don't need to. When there's a new guy on the mat, maybe with absolutely zero experience of jiu-jitsu, I don't need to ask for him to take a leap of faith and trust me onto something. One day this way I'm holding onto your heel will make sense. Right?
Yeah, I mean, Some, because you're telling him at the start your game is designed to get inside control, for example, then he has to trust you. It's a good thing to have inside control.
No, it doesn't have to trust me, because if the game is that as soon as I grab both your legs, you fall on your ass, he doesn't have to trust me. He's going to experience it immediately. That if they get between his legs, he's going to fall. There's no leap of faith there. There's nothing to trust. It's going to happen again and again and again in the next 5 minutes. And now suddenly, he really does not want to give you inside control. Everything is very, very real.
Sven, something specific here?
Not to your specific example, but I do have a specific question because that's a problem that I'm actually running into.
My God.
So I've been working towards a more like open and constraints led approach in like last couple of months. The only thing that I still find somewhat difficult to navigate is very late game scenarios. So I think it's relatively easy to apply to early stage and mid game scenarios, but because overall I think the specificity in at the start of every exchange is it's fairly specific, but that's easy to address. And then you have a high specificity at the end of most scenarios. Let's say finishing mechanics for submissions or whatever. That would be your classical like late stage scenario, because it requires quite a lot from both a ton of knowledge like about where to turn, how to turn to not get submitted, and how to anticipate and control and whatever to get to your finishing scenario. And that's specifically more for the advanced people in the room. So I find it somewhat hard to design games around that, because to me, oftentimes the more direct instruction, like do A, B, and C, still has a place specifically in late game. So it's easier to address those late game exchanges specifically like that.
And here is where, you know, probably two years and a half ago, I would have agreed more. Where I am now, no, I disagree. Like, really?
Okay, can you elaborate like on your what your process there was?
So look, I think that because for 20 years, any information that came our way was about how important this tiny detail is to make your finishing breaking mechanics effective. We kind of got brainwashed to it, right? And it I understand that it takes a while to trust a different way to look at things. Now, if we talk, for example, about the breaking mechanics of the legs, yes. If I talk to you, you will give me certain detail. If I could talk to Nelson, it will at least one detail will be different. If I talk to somebody else, will give me another detail, or will tell me to put more attention on one thing rather than another thing. Now, the fact that these things change depending on who is explaining them to me, it just means that they don't matter at all. But at the base, and underlining this, there are other elements that never change. So those are the only things that are really important. Anything else is your personal adaptation to the task. If you look at two people engaged in a leg lock game, in a leg lock fight, right? Open YouTube, two high-level guys fighting for their life about getting, you know, getting that heel hook while their own leg is in danger. Pause it. Can you tell me if they have more tension in the arm or in the hip or in the legs? If they are more pinching the knees or they are more pushing both knees in one direction rather than the other? You cannot tell me any of this. You cannot tell me which muscles are really engaged. What are they thinking about? You, nothing of that. It's simply impossible to measure. But what you can tell me is if the heel is trapped or not. Is the heel slipping out or not? Is the hip on the side of the knee or is on top of the knee? This very...
Don't you think they could tell you? Don't you think that if you stop them, they could tell you where exactly the pressure is, where the elbow is positioned, or...
Yes, they could tell me, but that's what's happening to them in that moment against that opponent. They fight the same opponent a second time, it changes. They fight a different opponent who has different legs, different length, different muscles, it changes again. They are weaker because the workout of the week before was particularly requiring, it changes again. And all this given that they actually can tell me where they are or they are not putting pressure and not pressure. So you cannot organize an entire system, coaching and everything else about these things that are almost arbitrary, and they change continuously and continuously and continuously. I'd rather look at things that don't change. So if we talk about leg locks, for example, I know that if your heel can slip from behind my arm, from inside my elbow, I'm not going to finish a leg lock. Because a leg lock is a rotational mechanic, right? And all the more rotational breaking mechanics are the same. I need to put as many bends as possible into your limb, and then I rotate it. Done. Nothing else happens, right? So one bend is going to be on the knee, another bend is going to be on the heel. If that heel slips continuously, I have bad breaking mechanics. If your knee is free to move, I have bad breaking mechanics. So I don't need to go into a lot of specificities. What I can do is to create a situation where you can experience what it means to hold that heel in the correct position while your partner is grip fighting, or while your partner is rotating left and right, or while your partner is cleaning your legs. And then you can have specific goal to help you towards retention of the heel. While you are, you know, you create tasks like this. While you are having the heel, I want you to keep pushing him away so that he cannot engage in grip fighting, for example, right? Or while you are holding the heel, rotate so that your chest hides his foot from his hands. And you go on like this. And you create this way, you create all the scenarios that can possibly happen. All the mechanics are there. And everything keeps being live. Nothing is scripted.
What?
To play devil's advocate again, if we looked at another field where it's maybe that's more established than jiu-jitsu, but fairly comparable. Let's say you're starting to learn an instrument. You're usually not told to just, I don't know, but you there don't usually create a scenario. So like, create somehow by blowing into this thing, create three tones that sound in harmony. But you learn, you're very specifically instructed on where to exactly put your fingers, how exactly to breathe. You're not creating your own music, not even a little bit. Like in the beginning, you're exactly playing the notes of a pre-existing piece of music. And then fairly late into the process of having your, basically having the way you work your tool or your instrument, then you get creative, and then first you build like variations on pieces you know, and then at some point you write your own pieces.
Yeah, also with music, we can have absolutely the same conversation, because it's plenty of people who learned how to play an instrument just playing with it by ear, and then after that they start to receive formal instruction, and they actually learn faster for the same reason, because they already had their fingers on the piano for a while, and now anything that the piano teacher is going to say is it's solving problems that the guys experience. There is a wall where I can actually put, you know, informations on it. You know what?
But don't you also have to get rid of? Don't you also have to get rid of false learnings that they just incorporated because they weren't properly instructed from the start?
But even if you learn in the classical method, you are still developing bad habits. And as soon as you change teacher, that teacher will point out bad habits that you didn't know you had, because your first teacher couldn't notice them. Because different teacher will see different things. So all this conversation doesn't change just because we change the subject. You know, especially in jiu-jitsu, there is this constant example that's being made that you have to learn the technique because they are the letters. And then, so you learn the letters, and then so that you can write words, so that you can write sentences, so that you can write very complex insults to the people that you don't like, right?
That's very wrong, but I know that. I know that analogy. It's a wrong analogy, but yes.
So I have learned to read and write in the exact opposite way. This is super funny, and it came back to my mind only when it's not true. I always thought a lot about it, but regardless, when I went when I started to go to school, so I was 6 years old, my teacher would give us strips of paper, and on the strip of paper there would be written the title of a fairy tale. And then she would go like, hey, look, here there's written Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Read it now. And, you know, she just tell you what's written there, and you're 6 years old, and you just go like, oh, ho, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Okay, here there's written Peter Pan. Read it. Peter Pan. Here there's written The Beauty and the Beast. Okay, so we had all these strips of paper. Then at some point you start to recognize the strip of paper, at the very least, because Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is a very longer strip of paper than Peter Pan, right? So you start to recognize them. Good. Now we cut all these strips of paper word by word. Here are the words. Make your own titles. And you go with simple things, right? You go Peter Pan and the Seven Dwarfs. Or the Beauty and Cinderella, right? And when that works, now we cut the letter. Make up your own words, right? So you have the opposite process. See my point?
It makes sense. The language, the language similarity is, it doesn't apply too well in the way it's usually applied to jiu-jitsu. Like, you have to learn words first and whatever. No, that's not actually how learning language works. So first of all, you need an idea of what it actually is that you want to be communicating. And you literally do not need any words to communicate. Like, I could just point at things and grunt and probably communicate what I want. And then, like, if I want the milk, I can just point at the milk and then point at me. It would probably be pretty helpful once I did that a couple of times and people did not initially understand me to know the word for milk. But I can start communicating an idea way before I even know a word. And I can communicate it literally in any language, but point it at a thing and then pointing at me, and then fill that frame with more specifics after I established a pathway of, okay, because in language, I also, like, the finger pointing is then done by word, by saying that milk, and the that replaces the finger pointing. So it's way, it makes more sense to think about, you want to learn to communicate. So form an idea first, then you want to permit or you want to give that idea to another person. And then it's fairly helpful if you know something about sentences and words after.
We are back talking about a timeline. A timeline of
learning. Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant.
Where you start with a generic idea, you start working on it. When you meet problem, maybe there is somebody who can bring you the solution to the problem, or maybe you just have to do it until you find it, right? And you just keep repeating the process like this. So at the end of the line, yes, there is a moment where we can sit at the corner of the mat and nerd out about the tiniest differences in grip and how they affect your behavior and the your rate of success and all this thing, right? But that's now we are cold drilling, if you like. But that's at the end of the training.
Yeah.
After the discovering the territory has been done, problem solving has been done. Now we can nerd out about solution.
Okay, guys.
And we can cold drill and everything.
I gotta say, you lost me a little at the milk thing and Cinderella. But in case the users have the same feelings like I do, I think we got the point of this approach. Just to be clear.
And we also only have 5 minutes left in our meeting here. And because we're cheap fucks.
Just to make it clear, it's not that I specifically don't like it. I just wanted to ask the questions that cut up in my mind. So please recognize this. I don't hate this approach. I'm just asking the questions. But there's one more question I want to ask you. Why did you start this thing and how do you know it's working for you and you guys? So was there a time where you were just like, oh, this has to make sense, I'm doing it, or did you play with it and find out, okay, my guys are winning every beginner tournament, or what was the where was the point where you said this works for me?
Well, I have 4 minutes to explain it.
Yes.
When I got hired when I got hired in a gym to teach jiu-jitsu and MMA back when I was a brown belt, I knew already that I didn't want to go the traditional way and teach techniques because it just doesn't make sense for my brain, right? Back then there was no talk about equal approach or anything, but Keith Dale was a bigger thing than he is now. And he was very vocal about, you know, fact technique, you need to train concepts. So I was looking at that. At the same time, right, so I got at the same time interested in Keith Dale's work, and I get to reconnect with my late friend, Otavio Couto, who was a very, very particular for a Brazilian, and he will do the same. What he will do was to put you in a situation, let you try a bit, then he will fix it a bit for you, he will give you a direction, he will put you in the situation again. So without Otavio didn't know about ECO or anything, but in a personal way, he developed a way of training with repetition without repetition, which is a staple of constraint-led approach. And that's what set me in on this idea that I wanted to teach by concepts and not by technique. I half-assed it for a while. I was a bit successful, a bit not successful. And then by pure luck, I can't call it anything else than luck, two things happen at the same time. At some point, I decided, fuck it, for 3 months, whatever it happens, even if I fuck up completely everything, I will not teach a single technique. Everything has to happen through concepts and ideas, no drilling. I wanted to go hardcore on it. And at the same time, when I started this experiment, all the eco conversation blew up on the internet.
Okay.
Right? That was the perfect timing. So I jumped right on it. And I really had no reason to go back ever.
You're not a bandwagon.
Huh?
You're not a bandwagon. You started it.
I don't know. For sure, I'm not. Let's say early adopter.
Only 2 minutes now. But if there's a gym, someone is listening, says, "Okay, I want to get more into this. What should I do?"
Next level MMA.
I see. Yeah. is there any account?
Francesco for a seminar.
I know in Germany, Andre Prima Jiu Jitsu Münster is doing a great job.
Oh, yeah.
He's working a lot with Max Bickerton from London. So I'm 100% sure that Andre has Luis, Andre, I don't know how he wants to be called, 100% sure that he gets very good CLA classes on his mat. I know Alex and Lorian from Munich also are trying to go hardcore on it. And right now, I don't know. To my knowledge, there's no other hardcore gyms in Germany, but I might absolutely be wrong about it. Yeah, if you are serious into CLA, please reach out, talk to me.
We have less than a minute. This was perfect timing. Thank you very much for your time. It was very interesting. I will forget everything about it as soon as this conversation ends, but it was fun as long as it lasts.
I will keep going though.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
See you.
See you.